Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today, a different way of seeing things, the virtual reality way. It's one of the more fascinating outgrowths of the new technology, and it goes beyond gaming and other entertainment applications. Now the business world is putting those clunky headsets to work. St. Louis is right in the middle of it. Joining me to talk about virtual reality, or VR, are Bob Stolzberg, is the St. Louis Chapter President of Global Association for VR and AR, that stands for Augmented Reality. Ian Rentz is founder and director of Experience of Show Me Virtual, Missouri's first virtual reality company, which is based here and in New York City. Joe Mason is co-founder of Turnabout 3D, which has a new marketing tool utilizing VR. To those of you of a certain age, you may remember him as Joe Mama Mason on the radio and on television. Nice to, time does go by, doesn't it, Joe? Nice to have you all with us. Interesting discussion. The new technology is just overwhelming us. Bob, let me start with you because I think we have to differentiate between virtual reality and augmented reality. I think people are confused by the two.
Absolutely. In fact, I want to pass that to Ian. He's got a lot more experience with that than I do. Ian, why don't you take that?
Yeah, so virtual reality is it's a medium, and really what it is it's complete immersion. So it's the use of technology to trick your senses and trick your brain into being somewhere else that you aren't physically there. And the difference between virtual reality and augmented reality is overlaying digital objects in the space that you actually are in presently. So it's virtual objects in the place that you are physically present.
Bob, why do we want to trick the brain?
To get people to do what you want them to do.
Ah, that sounds almost sinister to me.
Well, I don't know about that. I think people want to learn in certain formats, in certain ways, and this technology absolutely lets them do that. Ian's shaking his head in agreement with me. What are you thinking?
Well, absolutely. You know, what VR really allows for is it allows for experiences. So if you've never been skydiving and you're afraid of skydiving, you have some primal fear of it, now you can go skydiving. There's no risk. Same thing with simulations. If you're a crane worker and you need to learn how to manage a crane to operate it, now you can do that in a virtual reality environment. You can learn to operate it, and you don't have to risk damaging a skyscraper and an expensive crane, and you can be fully trained on that equipment.
Joe Mason, are we turning some sort of a corner here with the VR? Because it seems to me that up until now, most of the emphasis has been on gaming. But now what you're involved in, what the others were involved in, goes far beyond that. Talk about the applications you're looking at.
It does, Don. That's a good point. And that's why we founded Turnabout 3D. Because, you know, you remember when everybody got people were first saying, hey, you know what, video conferencing is crazy. Mm-hmm. But nobody could do it. Nobody could do any kind of video conferencing, and they would have to go to an office, in one city, and then they would bring all their people at a business to an office in another city, and they would do video conferencing. And then a couple years later, what happened? The technology caught up with it. Now people do video conferencing, you know, from office to office. So it's the same sort of thing. Virtual reality now will be, I see it as the future of business communications, much the same way that people have tried to reach out with brochures and print and then electronic, you know, radio and TV, video. Now with virtual reality, they'll be able to do something much, much, much more impactful. You can experience a new facility. You can actually walk around a new facility as if you were there. You can, you can pick up products with your own hands. You can turn them around. You can examine them. You can even stick your head inside of products and see how they work from the inside out. So in terms of communicating information, especially if you're selling products or services, this is unheard of, especially the experience. And you got to experience a little bit of that. There's nothing you can say in this the half an hour that we'll all be on. There's nothing you can say on the radio to really give you the experience of watching a full 3D virtual reality experience. You take that headset off for the first time afterwards and you just say, wow, it's that amazing.
Ian, do you want to elaborate on that in terms of how you're using it, the application that you see for beyond what Joe has just discussed?
Yeah, I mean, I think marketing is huge. There's so many applications and really it's hitting every industry just at different levels. You know, we've seen it in healthcare. We've seen it for anything from visualization, letting doctors visualize, go in an MRI and see it in 3D and see where they need to do their surgery at very specifically. We've also seen it just on the therapeutic side, taking it to cancer patients and letting them kind of escape for a little bit and explore the world, you know, from their bed. It's really hitting every industry at this point.
Bob, where does the video come from? I mean, there has to be video, clearly. And how do you get inside somebody's head to take pictures so that you can have them have a doctor experience it through VR?
That's a great question, Don. And there's a lot of companies out there that can help brands and businesses adopt this technology. And so when you're looking for a video company, you really need to do your research, because I think a lot of them focus on different things. We have some really good ones here in St. Louis that I recommend people start with. And that's what the St. Louis chapter of the VR AR Association can provide, is those resources, that network, those introductions so that people can learn. I want to pass it back to Ian, who's, you know, with ShowMe, has the most experience with video content in those VR worlds. Ian, can you follow up to Don's question?
Yeah, I mean, if video specifically, a huge use case is tourism. So letting you see, you know, Thailand, letting you see China as if you were there, and now you don't have to spend the travel money, the time investment, all that as well.
And if I may, because I don't think your question was actually answered, you said, how do you actually capture the video where you're going to show this to people? So we have camera systems that we built using 3D printers. This is back before anybody was selling anything. And so we use up to 18 4K cameras in an array, each one in a stereoscopic pair. So you're a left eye and a right eye. But 9 of those, so a total of 18 4K cameras, and they capture everything. And the amount of data that it generates is just overwhelming. It takes 2.5 hours to download just about 7 minutes of us shooting in a morning. So it takes 2.5 hours of the highest speed computers to transfer all of that data over to the main computer. So it's an incredible amount of data. Now, this is at a very high level. There are also $300, $600 cameras that will do 360, but just flat 360, where you can turn around. And those aren't that much data. But at the very high level, and you know, when I say high level, there are feature film companies that are looking to do. The director of Batman has the same rig that I built. And a woman that works for us in Paris works with him on a feature film that he's doing. And it's the same sort of thing. The directors, the film industry is looking at virtual reality as how can we storytell in the VR world. But it's very, very difficult to do and then to stitch all of these pairs of videos together so that it becomes a seamless experience.
Well, Bob, another part of it is that in order to see these videos, you have to wear a rather clunky apparatus. And a lot of people might find that somewhat disquieting, perhaps.
Perhaps so. I think it's all in the eye of the beholder. The people who want those experiences are willing to put that headset on. And I think we've seen over the past couple of years the evolution of those headset and Oculus-type devices, where it might be something that you could put your smartphone in. It might be a fully immersion visor, like, you know, out of Tron or Daft Punk, where you can't see anything. But that's the price you've got to pay to interact with this technology and to have these new experiences.
But what I'm thinking of is a bunch of people sitting in a movie theater with these goggles on. I mean, is that what we're likely to be seeing in the not-too-distant future?
You know, I don't think I'm the expert to predict the future on how people will be using the headset-type devices. I think that there will be an evolution of this. And naturally, people want choice. For some people, they'll want to wear a standard pair of glasses with a technology lens overlaid on them. Some people will want a contact lens. Other people will want, you know, the cool-looking visor that's got neat colors and they can personalize, right? I want to pass it back to the rest of the panel, though, to find out what their thoughts are.
Or like The Matrix, where they actually figure out how to connect to your brain. And eventually that would be it, whether through a hard wire or wireless.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to answer, though, what you asked, Bob. And so it is a big ask. You're asking someone to kind of isolate themselves for a few minutes, put on a headset. And so the real challenge here is, you know, anyone can build a camera. It's just simple math. Anyone can download Unity, start making experiences today. You can go buy a $200, $300 camera as well. The real challenge is making something so compelling and so impactful that people want to put on that headset. They seek it out. They seek out these experiences. And when they take it off, they want to come back and have another experience. And it's a very hard problem that companies all over the world are trying to solve. And not too many have solved it in a very meaningful and repeatable way.
Bob mentioned contact lenses. I've seen literature indicating that that's probably where it's going at some point, that it might be just that simple.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, did you want to say something? Okay. I was experiencing some of the equipment here earlier today, and one of you mentioned a cell phone, and it was a cardboard box, basically, and a cell phone that was creating this experience. What is going on with the brain when all of this is going on? I mean, we talk about tricking the brain. I have to tell you, I became nauseous while I was watching this, and my equilibrium was upset.
That's not unusual that people experience some discomfort, but usually it's people who are predisposed to that anyway. I get car sick, or, you know, I have to ride in the front, I can't ride in the back, or so that's usually how it works. There is a lot of work, and there's a big field of study to manage that sort of discomfort with virtual reality, because it's easy to do. For people that don't know what they're doing, it's very easy to induce nausea in people when they have this headset on, because you are tricking your brain. Your brain has never had this kind of stimulus put in that way directly before. Now, once you do it for a couple of years or 10 years, or the technology has matured and you're very used to it, it'll be different. Your brain will be kind of like, you know, at its defense and ready to go. But for right now, it can be tricky. But generally speaking, most people work through that and then they have a good experience.
I think, you know, Don, I'm not a doctor. But to answer your question, what's going on in the brain?
Well, wait a minute. What about that exam that you gave me?
Oh, yeah. what's going on in the brain while you're in that virtual reality experience is the same thing that's going on as if you were actually experiencing it. Mm-hmm. And I want to point back to Ian's example of, you know, skydiving. You know, you can literally put that on and trick your brain into thinking you are doing that. Or, you know, maybe your example of using the cardboard device with the cell phone in it, that's not the best user experience. There is much better visual technology to make you feel more comfortable, so you wouldn't get those types of health effects. But the point is, the different tech will show you different things to allow you to have a much richer experience. And what's happening in your brain is the same thing as if you were actually there.
And maybe we should, you know, you just mentioned that, and pardon me for interrupting, but maybe we should talk about that, Don, and to explain to the listeners, let's talk about how one experiences virtual reality, like specifically from, you know, a high end to a low end or an easier end. And that starts, you know, at the very high end, you need essentially a really, really beefed up computer. And you would have a system like an Oculus Rift or something similar to that. And gamers use those, and those are very high end. They're requiring a computer to render stuff out at anywhere from 30 to 90 frames a second. And then as you move down, then you come down where your smartphone comes into play. Then you use that to display the content, and you insert it typically into either a hard plastic case or a cardboard box that is somewhat like a ViewMaster. Mm-hmm. The old ViewMaster, except sure. You put your phone in there, and then you put it up, and you have a little lens in front of each eye, and then you play the content through your phone. And YouTube has content like that. You can watch stereo 3D content now, or you can do 360 or 360 stereo content in YouTube on your phone. Other people have apps. We have apps that run on the iPhone and on Android. And then from there, you can take the content and push it down even a little lower, but then it allows it to go out to more people. Like Facebook has 360 video. And so you can have a video on Facebook in view on your phone without a viewer that you can look at in 360 either by standing and moving around or by taking your finger and panning around the scene.
Yeah. I have to take a break. Let's do that now. We'll come back and continue our discussion. We're talking about virtual reality, and we're talking in studio with three people who are very intimate with the subject. Ian Rentz is founder and director of experience of Show Me Virtual. Bob Stolzberg is the St. Louis chapter president of Global Association for VR and AR. Joe Mason, co-founder of Turnabout 3D, which is all of whom are here in St. Louis. Back to continue this conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Ian Rentz, Bob Stolzberg, and Joe Mason. We're talking virtual reality. You know, one of the issues that comes to my mind, I'm not sure which one of you to ask about this, is the issue of ethics. Is there an ethics issue here? Bob, you had earlier talked about using tricking the brain, getting people to do what they want to do. It would seem to me that there could be ethics questions in connection with virtual reality.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's really interesting about that is that's the Wild West. There are no laws governing this. It's really up to each company or creator to follow what we would call best practices, or in the real world, we call it common sense. Mm-hmm. You don't do this because these are the possibilities or the repercussions. I see Ian shaking his head about some things. I want to give him the opportunity.
I mean, just being an open medium, and especially right now, there's so much attention around it. You know, there are going to be bad experiences. There's going to be a dark side to it too. But that's it's just you have to be a responsible developer, and you have to take ethics into consideration, make sure you're following the rules, make sure you're making things that are positive. But, you know, the dark side of it is unavoidable.
Joe, your thoughts on that?
I'm not so concerned about that. I mean, the people put on a headset, they know that they're going to go into an experience, and it's an artificial experience. I don't think there's any point generally where you're inside of virtual reality that you are really divorced of the outside world. You know you're still inside this environment. And it's more of the responsibility of the content, I think, that you're being honest, that you know what you're saying is true, that if you're showing a product and demonstrating it, that it works that way, or a car, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, not yet. But, you know, in the future, a couple years in the future, it'll be so convincing that, you know, you will completely forget your physical self, physical sense of where you are. And it will absolutely be used to trick you, you know, and there will be a kind of underworld dark side to it, too. Hopefully it's not popular, but it exists, you know, just like it exists on the internet. VR is not going to be immune to it either.
And people are still trying to figure out how to police the internet, to the sense that, you know, a lot of law has yet to be written with regard to what's happening on the internet. The same is going to have to happen here.
Sure. And I think, you know, the underbelly that I think we're really referring to is the experiences of interaction that people can have. You don't need to leave your house to go have an experience. So if you're trying, you know, let's use dating sites. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, right? How are dating websites going to be impacted by virtual reality and augmented reality technology? When I can put a headset on and go meet somebody somewhere else and have a virtual experience that my brain thinks is the same thing, you know, in all essence, that's a really game changer. And there are people that will use that for nefarious purposes simply because there's people that are willing to pay for experiences out there. That's what they want. Not everybody wants to go learn something or, play a game.
That's very well said.
Thank you.
We should also point out that porn has arrived also in the virtual reality world.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
well, I point that out because the most visited sites on the web are the porn
exactly.
sites, let's face it.
Yeah. So and it's supposed to be enormous.
That sort of
this was really – they were looking at – the adult industry was looking at this the same way that they looked at videotapes when they came out. And as we all know that story about VHS winning out over Betamax over Sony, and that was JVC over Sony, the reason that VHS won an inferior video format is that they allowed the adult industry to use their brand, and Sony didn't. So, yeah, there's some real implications and real questions about the adult industry and virtual reality.
Well, let's talk about where St. Louis is in this whole world. It seems like an awful lot is going on here. Are we ahead of the pack in any sense of the word, Bob?
I think absolutely we are. St. Louis has a very rich history of VR and AR companies and very passionate people, dating back to shortly after 2010. You know, for example, the Virtual Reality and Augmented Reality Association, which is a global industry association for virtual reality and mixed reality connecting, started here in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And some of the largest brands in the world are part of this association, which, you know, it has a simple mission to accelerate the industry with smart growth. It's a tremendous group of over 30 chapters with 45 staff. That's employees that are here in St. Louis. And it's a great way for people to network with others. And so, you know, the point of that is to close the loop. St. Louis was really one of the cities that was the genesis for the VR, AR community growth. Mm-hmm. And it continues to be. Something that I'm very passionate about and that we're rebooting is the St. Louis chapter of the VR AR Association, so that we're going to provide regular meetings for people that are beginners, novices, and even experts like the ones in the room to come and meet others, to network, learn about what's out there.
And so what Bob said, I think that's going to be hugely important is these meetups. And, you know, I agree to disagree a little bit, but I actually think we're pretty behind the curve compared to most major cities in the U.S. If you look at, you know, Nashville's a great example. Nashville's about the size of St. Louis, and there's a thriving VR community there. We were there 3 months ago for a conference, and it just exists. You can just go to meetups. There's regularly scheduled collaboration. And here it's kind of you meet one-on-one with developers, you meet with companies, but there's not this collaborative environment quite yet. And there has been, you know, there's been a little bit of back and forth, and it's kind of come and gone over the years, riding the hype. But it's great to hear that the VRAR Association is going to be helping foster that collaboration and doing these regular meetups.
And I would agree, too, and I'm glad that there is a local effort to do that. But I was just in New York and Paris and Strasbourg working on virtual reality for Merck and MilliporeSigma. And there – the really big players in the world are not here in St. Louis. They are in L.A., New York, Amsterdam, believe it or not. And it's very interesting. With our platform, though, we're trying to launch. And so this is the first, as far as I know, the only platform in St. Louis that is complete from acquisition all the way down to delivery with servers, applications, you know, that run on your iPhone and everything else. So we're trying, you know, and again, I think it's great all across the board for the VR and AR community here in St. Louis. But this platform now truly competes on a global level with everything else because it's very complete.
Who else is doing what you're doing, for instance?
In town, no one. But there are some people do you know anybody that's doing all that, like that has servers? And, you know, we even have proprietary server apps. We have iPhone, Android apps that are players.
Yeah, I mean, we absolutely build applications.
No, but I mean, that a company that has a platform that exists. I brought one of these for you. This is a Google Cardboard, but that's branded that you can, again, put your a phone in. But to answer your question, I think there's about 8 companies in the world that do that completely. The New York Times uses one. They're very big into VR.
I can tell you a little bit about some of the St. Louis VR AR adopters. I would say it's really led by Aisle 411, which is a company that allows stores and brands to map their retail locations so customers can have a really great mobile or VR experience to find products. But others in St. Louis, St. Louis Science Center is a very big proponent, Boeing, my company VoiceXP, and we've also got some real major players like Google who have invested in St. Louis. And I want to give a shout out to the Cortex Innovation Community, who does a lot of really great things with VR too. So there's certainly companies in St. Louis doing things. I want to invite everybody to an event that we have. It's the next St. Louis VR AR meetup on July 27th. It's happening at the Venture Cafe, and we're going to have a panel of industry experts talking about how VR is disrupting retail and commerce. We're going to have the CIO of Schnucks there. We're going to have some other guests, hopefully from Enterprise Rent-A-Car, talking about what they're doing. And Nathan Pettyjohn from Aisle 411 will be there as well. So this is an invitation for everybody in St. Louis and the surrounding Tri-County areas. If you want to learn about this technology, if you want to get engaged, come on out July 27th. Just go to meetup.com and search for VRAR.
What kind of disruption are you talking about?
You know, well, like Ian was mentioning, there's a lot of brands and businesses that are adopting this technology for various purposes. Meritz, for example, is a really big proponent of VR in St. Louis, and they have offerings for trade shows, right? I go to a lot of trade shows in the IT world, and people are always looking to draw people into their booth. Mm-hmm. So they'll have a really immersive experience with brand items within a virtual reality world. Now, these companies are buying that technology and using it. So I hope I answered your question with that, but it's very wide in the uses of it.
Anything to add in?
I was just going to say, you know, it's hard to ignore Boeing. Boeing's been into VR. It's a little more privatized. You don't see it as much. But
how? Okay, our time is winding down, but how would Boeing use VR?
So their engineers can go in and build things in 3D space rather than just building it on a flat screen with 3D software. It's a little clunky. They can go in, use their hands to manipulate models, run simulations, that sort of thing.
Design, primarily for design, that sort of thing.
I'm sure there's a lot of uses that as a civilian, no idea what they're doing, but yeah, absolutely. Design
simulation, emulation. Yeah, right.
It's also being used, as I understand it, for a lot of training programs for the military, for law enforcement, and that sort of thing.
NASA was using it even in the 80s. They were using VR. Super clunky, not like it is today, but to give their astronauts a sense of this is what you need to change when you're out there in space. You know, this is how you need to move, that sort of thing.
What's the next? We've got 2 minutes left. What's the next thing we should look for with regard to the next step in the VR world, Joe? Do you have any sense of that?
I think, you know, depending, you know, for gaming or whether it's a business application, I guess in a business application, I think a lot more companies will have this to travel to a trade show, to be in their lobby. When you know a visitor comes in, you sit down, and all of a sudden you get to see 8 locations all over the world. You get to see their inside their factory, or even to send out the sales department sends out tools, the little cardboard viewers, and says, "Hey, you know, look at our products and services on this." In the gaming world, I think it's continuing to advance. It's certainly leading. I think the charge, and it has been. But you know, Google. People may not know this. Google is really giving a big push to this and funding it in the millions of dollars.
I want to jump in there and add, I think the biggest disruption coming to VR and AR is the integration of voice technology, the voice user interfaces like Alexa and Google Home, because when people are immersed in these VR experiences, they're going to want to use their voice to do things as well as use their hands.
And that's a whole different ballgame, and you're right in the middle of it. We'll have to talk about that another time, but it's certainly an interesting technology. Ian, in 15 seconds,
yeah,
final thought?
I think it's all, you know, content exists, and there's a big content push, but it's all about creating engaging content, content that people want to see and that they'll seek out to see, and that's the big challenge that's up ahead for us as VR producers and in the VR space is make things that people want to experience.
Well, it's great to hear that St. Louis is so heavily involved. Thank you all so much for being with us. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Ian Rentz is founder and director of experience for Show Me Virtual. Bob Stolzberg, St. Louis chapter president of Global Association for VR and AR. Joe Mason is co-founder of Turnabout 3D. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.